You listen to the PA Rut Report, Pennsylvania's premier podcast station, PA Rut.
All right, all right, all right. You are here with PA Rut Report's Hunting, Fishing, and Outdoors. We were coming to you from the Bearded Buck Camp again this year. We came up here for the first day of archery season. It was an exciting, very exciting weekend, and we'll get into that in a little bit. But we're here with QDMA's own Kip Adams. He's a director of education. Would you say hello, Kip?
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
Not a problem. And, of course, Jay Rod and Jerry Tibbett, the founder of Bearded Buck, he's here with us at his camp in very accommodating and awesome time. We appreciate you having us up here.
It's great to have you guys back.
I now attribute J-Rod to being some kind of like a voodoo priest, mystic kind of guy. We're sitting there. This weekend was extremely visually exciting, but also emotionally exciting, just everything that was going on. But he was kind of subtly predicting things right before they would happen. three or four things. Deer coming out of places, deer being shot. It was a little weird. It's kind of like, you ever see the movie Funny Farm with Chevy Chase, where
when a deer comes running out of cross,
they're trying to sell the property at the end, and they're like, Q. It felt like that, but it definitely wasn't that. But it was an amazing experience all around. And thanks to you guys for having us up here and enabling us to do that. Touching quickly on the first week of archery season and our space, we've got a decent amount of first day harvests, a couple big ones on the site. There's
a couple good ones, yeah.
Couple good roll calls in the morning, in the evening.
I think we had over 400 comments in the morning, something like that, close to 400 comments in the morning, and then the evening was just as good. It's a little bit lower, but not too bad.
So a good start to the year, a good start to the year all around. So very quickly touching back on us coming up here, we came up here to hang out with the Bearded Buck, but also talk to Kip here from the QDMA. And I think we can let Kip give us a better understanding of what the QDMA is, because as I'm sitting here, as we're sitting here talking while we're hanging out, I personally wasn't very aware of the QDMA and what the QDMA was and what the QDMA does. So with that being said, I'm sure a lot of our listeners out there are also unaware of the positive effects that the QDMA has and what it actually is that the QDMA does. So I'll let you take it from there, Kip, from next place.
Sure. Thank you. And thanks for having me here. And it has been an incredible weekend for sure. Well, at QDMA, we say that QDMA is where deer hunters belong, because we are inclusive of all deer hunters. And we're an educational organization. It's a nonprofit national group that specializes in education. We help teach people, about deer, how deer see, how deer hear, help folks be more successful in the woods, teach them, how to be good stewards of deer and how to enhance habitat so it's better for, deer and all other wildlife species. So we're deer hunters, and that's who belong to QDMA, deer hunters throughout the Whitetails Range.
That's pretty awesome. And as we've talked about in the past, we touch a decent amount on what you can do as a listener, as an outdoorsman, as a parent of a child that may be interested in hunting or is going out there and hunting. What you do now has a tremendous impact on what the sport will be or the tradition will be in the future. So if you're really serious about it, or you're really passionate about it, I'm not trying to guilt you into anything, but you need to be going out and doing more than you're doing right now. Otherwise, it will decline. So the QDMA plays into that very well in relation to how, if I'm an everyday Joe and I really am interested in doing something to improve upon the tradition, but also to improve just my personal atmosphere or where I hunt or what I know, in doing so, QDMA is a good place to start.
And you offer courses. There's online courses you can take. There's actually you can go to courses in person, and you teach them throughout the states, different places, correct?
Yeah, we have all kinds of educational materials, some stuff that is free. We have tons of information on our website that people can grab, videos, you know, articles, et cetera. We do have the online classes we're talking about right up to in-person classes and certification programs. So we have a little bit of, you know, across the spectrum, anybody and how deeply or how intensive you want to get into managing deer and habitat, we have something for everybody.
And QDMA is more than just food plots. I mean, people think that, you know, QDMA is just, oh, they're going to teach you how to plant a food plot. No, you're way more than that.
That's for sure. And we certainly can teach people how to plant a food plot, but, you know, we also teach them how to manage timber, you know, how to manage old fields so that we have, you know, food in addition to food plots for deer. And, you know, somebody who tries to carry a deer herd on a food plot often are, you know, miserable.
Right.
Because,
right.
You know, dry summers, something, you know.
Yes.
What? So,
yes.
Teach them how to be good habitat managers.
As a prime example of what we've been talking to about up to this point. So we come up here, yesterday we got up here around, 4 o'clock?
Yeah, about 4.
So we get up here and J-Rod's chomping at the bit to get out in the stand, and our plan is to come up here and scout. So we go out in this middle of this field in a Texas stand, which is just a big wooden box jacked up in the sky about 15 feet, J-Rod?
20, yeah, 15, yeah. 18 feet.
Probably about 15 feet.
Brad was a little afraid to get up in there.
I was nervous.
His legs were shaking. He had to hold on to the railing.
I wore my safety harness up the rail.
So if you draw a parallel to what the QDMA, paying attention to the QDMA, the involvement of the QDMA, and how it can influence a property, the Bearded Bucks land here is an extremely good example. So we're in one field, about 300 acres was that area we were in, maybe a little.
This part of the farm is 144 acres. I think we were probably watching about a 20-acre food plot, a destination plot out here.
So we're in a 20-acre plot that, as we sat there, it was, I mean, you so in the Texas stands is in the middle of this field, so you can see 360 degrees. I think you could have sat in a swivel chair and slowly turned yourself around and saw a new deer coming out into these food plots every time you turn, every angle of direction that you would turn. So that J-Rod does a lot with the QDMA in relation to how he goes about handling his property, and you can kind of allude a little bit more to your relationship with QDMA and how it's impacted you and how you're managing your land.
Importantly, how you and Kip met would be a great start to that.
Well, I was fortunate enough 17 years ago to take a leap and buy my first piece of property to try and manage it myself. And after years and years of doing that, I wouldn't say it was unsuccessful. We just weren't seeing the results we thought were possible. I think it was 10 years ago, Kip, we talked about the date yesterday a little bit.
10 years.
That I attended the Deer Steward 1 course. It was in Erie, Pennsylvania, I believe.
That's correct.
And it was from there that we got the building blocks to really change our property and to manage things different and set different type of goals from learning. And everything we do now is really based on that first visit and initial visit and following up with the resources you guys have. And it's definitely worked for us.
Well, one of the things that I agree that you have a tremendously well-managed property, and it's not just food plots, but, you know, you have young forests, you have older forests, you have that cover, you have some early successional habitat, all the pokeweed that we've seen, and, you know, it's the combination of all that together that makes it so successful. And your comment early on about him being kind of a voodoo and all that, you know, and part of that is, and you see this a lot from QDMA members, they are so engaged with what's going on, and, you know, it's not just a two-week hunting season anymore, you know,
right.
He's involved year-round, so he understands, you know, intimately how deer are using the property and why, because of his work. And so that's what makes that kind of prediction possible.
Yes.
And ultimately, you know, better hunting because of the effort he puts in, you know, the entire year.
We always say here at the Bearded Buck, we're about so much more than a trigger pull.
That's true.
You know, Pennsylvania is a one buck state and usually one doe if you don't have bonus things. So we do a 365. The trigger pull is a small portion of that year. And if that doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. Our satisfaction on the property here is a reward enough.
You should be proud of that because we saw firsthand last night some of the quality deer you are growing, all the fawns and the, you know, and we saw one feeding today off his mother. It was awesome when we just pulled up on it. So it's stuff like that you don't see very often. And to have unpressured deer is a big part of this. You can just, you know, drive around and watch these deer in the fields from far off or sit in that Texas blind and just see all the action happen right in front of your eyes, and it's a beautiful sight.
And as hunters, I think we all like to get out there and be the hunter ourselves, but what we get the most satisfaction out of is like this weekend with Kip and Katie, his daughter Katie, come in and was able to harvest her first deer. I guess we didn't talk about that at all yet, but I mean, it was...
And then we had an action-packed weekend.
There's so much we could... so much we should go through, go over right now, but it all ties together. But going back real quickly to the bearded buck and the land and the management, if you're unfamiliar, bearded buck has a television show on the Pursuit Channel. If you haven't watched it yet, I always draw a parallel to our audience of where the majority of people listening right now. You're a Pennsylvania boy, you're a Pennsylvania hunter, you're a Pennsylvania woman in the outdoors. You see a lot of hunting shows, you watch a lot of hunting shows. There's not very many in your backyard, and this is Pennsylvania land, hunting for Pennsylvania animals. Granted, they go out other places, but to say, show me as close to how I hunt in a show, the bearded buck kind of gives you that, but it also gives you an example of, here's what we do to manipulate what we're attempting to get out of it, which is to harvest an animal in the show's instance. But you get to see little bits and pieces of the puzzle coming together, and then the final benefit of that in harvesting animals. So the bearded buck is a good show. If you can check it out, we recommend it. Pennsylvania boys.
Good poke.
Tell you one of the things that I like the most about it as well, from a Pennsylvania, I'm a Pennsylvania native, and as I travel the country working with deer, you know, hunters are a little different all across the Whitetails Range, just, you know, with their culture, the hunting culture, the hunting opportunities, experiences. So, you know, one of the things I think is so cool about Pennsylvania is that the deer camp mentality, you know, kind of the working together and helping others mentality, you know, and that's just not on any of the outdoor shows that you see. It's one-on-one, you know, me against this deer or whatever. And, you know, and the bearded buck is very different. It's clearly a hunting camp mentality. It's helping, you know, hunters helping others and being friends. And that goes along with it. And that comes through on the show. And I think that's very important. And that's one of the reasons that Pennsylvania hunters will love the show.
I agree there. Camaraderie is very strong.
Why don't we just get into the hunt this weekend up here? And
in relation to camaraderie.
Yeah. The action-packed stuff. So Jerry could have been out hunting on the first day of archery season, but he decided to take us out just to scout and stuff. He knew we were coming up. So we appreciate that, and I'm sure you wanted to be in a tree stand, but we had just as much fun up there. And why don't you walk us through what we actually did up there what we saw.
As we said earlier, for me, Austin, even both of us, my daughter Allison, we get out. The start of the season is just that time to sort of unpack and get all your gear ready for the season, make sure everything's in line. So it wasn't breaking my heart not being in the stand. It was good. We had an opportunity, the three of us, to sit in a what we call a Texas-style stand, and we were able to see. Austin was maybe 120 yards away or so in a double set with Vince filming him. We were sort of going to scout that field. We had been seeing a buck on a trail cam, on the Exodus trail cam, that we nicknamed Freak. We saw it all through the velvet season. I had never seen the deer on hoof before. Austin had got some velvet footage of that deer, and it came by that area. So we thought maybe there's an opportunity we get to see that deer that night. And at the same time, Kip and Katie were on the whole other side of the property, and we had a lot of deer movement there on trail cam. So we were very expectant to get into some deer. Didn't think it would all happen so fast.
Two of those voodoo-type instances happened within very close time proximity of each other. So we're sitting there in the Texas blind, and this straight out from us, you can see a little scrubby buck come out of the woods, and Jerry says, "Wouldn't it be cool if the freak just came out right behind that guy?" And half an hour later, here comes the freak. So he's standing there looking at his cell phone, saying, "Man, I wish Katie would get a deer." Went to the cell phone, and like 3 seconds later, he's like, "Oh, she got one."
It was that quick. It was that. It just like we
willed
had
it to happen. It was his birthday, something. So.
Yes, it was a great birthday. Two great birthday presents there with Katie and Austin tagging.
So the camaraderie side of it, there's some instances in your life where the adrenaline level overtakes you to where you're kind of lose control of what it is that you're doing in excitement. So there's three of us crammed into this Texas blind, which
wasn't crammed. That was laid out.
Wasn't really crammed in, but we're big guys.
Big fellas.
I was supposed to be somewhat of a producer and filming a lot more than I was. When I saw that buck come out, I think we pushed the red button and let it record, and we sat back and enjoyed the show.
Understandably so. So we're watching the freak come out of where Jerry said the freak would come out of. And it's, in our eyes, from where we're seeing it, we're like, is that out of range for him to shoot at? Because we knew where Austin was, which is Jerry's son. And we're standing there watching, and Jerry's saying, "Man, this is the third instance of the voodoo." He said, "He can take that shot. He could take that shot.
Yes, he did.
And we're sitting there watching him, and Pierre Brad is actually watching Austin in the tree stand, and Jerry and I are watching.
He had binoculars on him.
Yep. Watching the freak come up. Jerry's saying, he can take that shot. He can take that shot. And it's a little quiet, and we're watching and watching. All of a sudden, whack! Arrow hits the deer. Deer drops straight down in that Texas stand. Erupted.
It started shaking. We didn't know if it was going to stay on all four legs.
Video only. The audio would not be usable.
only in the NC-17 version of the Bearded Buck.
So what an unbelievable moment that we got to witness that happen. I mean, it's not too often you get to witness somebody take a deer, unless you're sitting above them videotaping them like off in a distance like that. What an incredible experience. What a heck of a buck, and I'm sure you know the audience will see that soon. Incredible stuff.
What we have 2 minutes after watching that, we spun the chair around and saw another 4-year-old seven-point that we've been after. It's on the hit list also, and saw several other deer.
Yeah. We'll talk about a seven-point. That was a hammer seven-point.
That was a big boy. Big boy. Perfect symmetrical rack. But to draw another parallel there in relation to camaraderie, in relation to kind of you and I, PA Rep Brad, we both have young sons, young enough that they're not yet in the woods hunting, going out and harvesting. They come out in the woods with us and sit in the blinds or sit in stands. But the parallel, so we're sitting in the Texas stand and J-Rod's watching Austin, who is his son, harvest a really amazing buck, which you'll be able to see here eventually at the same exact time. Kip is with his daughter Kate, and this just happens to be Kate's first deer harvest, which as a parent, I can imagine what it's like to see your child go through that type of an emotional experience. Because knowing me going through it as a child, I remember being all jazzed up about it. And I'm sure Brad, you're the same. I'm sure Kip and Jerry were the same too. As a kid, it's one thing. It's one thing to harvest a deer, but to see it or live it vicariously so positively through your child must be pretty intense. Feeling. So it was kind of cool, that parallel, again, going back to camaraderie, the hunting camp, the family tile, family type message. And one of the major things that's so impressive about our space in hunting in general, just that level of brotherhood or whatever you want to say it is. But so to lead into the second part of the story, Kate's harvest. Kip, you can kind of give
us a breakdown. Why don't you walk us through that?
Sure. We certainly were lucky. Katie and I got to come here to hunt with Jerry and the folks here. And obviously, I know how well he managed this property, and both from a habitat end and a deer herd end. And for us, you know, we were very fortunate. We have some land at home that we could have stayed and hunted on. But Jerry's a good friend, and you know, and I wanted to come back. I wanted to be able to see him. And it's a tremendous experience for my daughter. You know, come here, and she gets to see other people and understand something, you know, outside of just our camp and our land. So anyway, we had a great morning, saw some deer yesterday morning, nothing close enough, but still lots of learning experiences for her, you know. So then last night, where we fast forward to the evening set, you know, a deer came out, and it worked out really cool because it not only provided a great shot opportunity, but it forced her to wait for a good solid 2 minutes, you know, as the deer is quartering to her, and, you know, and we're talking through the whole thing, you know, and she knows we spend a lot of time shooting, so I'm very, you know, confident in her proficiency, but equally, and I'm even more proud, you know, of the time that she spends understanding, you know, when we look at a picture of a deer in a magazine or on a computer or something, you know, where would you shoot based on this angle, hold here, you know, nope, don't shoot this yet. So it's very important to me that she not only is a good shot, but you know, that she's a good steward and, you know, understands, you know, how to be a hunter, not just a shooter. So it quartered to us, it seemed forever, and I know my heart was about to explode in my chest, and luckily she was a little more calm, you know, as we're kind of talking through it, and it would angle to us, and then almost turn so she could shoot, and then it would turn back to us, and so I'm very proud, you know, that she waited until it was right, and then finally it turned, and its leg that was to us cleared the spot, you know, kind of stepped forward, so the vitals were clearly exposed, and she shot, and then just what a flood of emotions after that. And everybody remembers their first deer.
Oh, yeah.
And if you don't remember your first deer, then you just need to stop hunting and just go.
You're
to
maybe
sleep
doing
forever.
You're doing it for the wrong reasons. Yeah.
So anybody can relate to that, whether it's your own child or somebody you took. So and it you know, it all came back to me, you know, back in 1982 when I shot my first deer with my dad by my side. So it was a tremendous feeling for sure. We're very fortunate.
Yeah. Oh, and we got to experience another hunter's first deer, and that at the Bearded Puck is something that we try and do a few times a year, and it's probably some of our best hunts. And I can tell you the second time that Katie's been in camp, she's a very fine young lady, and she's developing to be a fine hunter. I mean, we got to watch her track this deer. We found this deer. She got right in there. She was excited with this deer. She was noting about the ticks on the deer. She got this deer. I mean, Kip, obviously with a mentor like Kip, you know, you plant corn, you get corn, we said earlier.
Yeah, about it.
But again, going back to the camaraderie side of things. So we're all celebrating Austin's deer, the freak's down. We're all standing around it. And we had anticipated that we'd be leaving the freak scene and going over and seeing how Katie was doing. And in the meantime, we had found out that they hadn't found the deer. So there's, how many of us were there? Eight guys and Katie up here.
If you count Cud, 10 of us.
Cud covered that much ground.
Cud could be a plus, or Cud could be a negative, depending upon how you're interpreting his presence. So we'll put him as an even, because he did provide some comedic background last night. But so from a camaraderie standpoint, there's eight guys who, Kip we just met, a couple of the other guys we really just met. An example of working together as a team to achieve a goal. So all eight guys and Katie go back out after this deer has been shot, after looking at the footage and seeing where she hit the deer and saying, man, that, I mean, it was a perfect shot.
It's a very good shot.
We all
perfect
said she
shot.
Smoked it.
So back to the camaraderie side. All these people working together as a group that don't really know each other but shared in that passion of, one, getting her first kill, because that was the big dialogue between a lot of people. It'd be if you've shot a deer and not found it and don't have some kind of remorse related to that, then you're hunting for the wrong reasons. But also your first experience in creating a long-lasting passion for it. You want that first experience with a child, you want that first kill to be one that's as positive in nature as it can be. So we're up there. What time did we go up there?
I'm not sure what time we got up there. We didn't get back till it was probably 10:45 when we got back.
We tracked that deer for two hours, 3 hours, eight guys.
We collectively said it's probably best. It was going to be cold.
Yep.
Pull out, come back, we get some fresh eyes and some light in the morning, and we felt confident, and what we did.
Went back in the morning and covered a lot of ground and got to the last corner where we were like, okay, man, it's got to be here. We really hope it's here. And sure enough, there it was. And then you get to experience the jubilation of, one, the thankfulness that you found the deer that was harvested, and two, getting to see Katie and her dad experience that together.
I think it was obvious. I think Kip was 300 yards down over a practical cliff, and we said, well, we have a little time till he gets up here, and he was hooting holler and 20 yards away from us in about 5 minutes, I think.
Yeah, they got up there pretty quick.
Yeah. Yep.
Quicker than we all thought.
Rightfully so.
Obviously, it's nice to hear, you know, hey, we got it. And from my end as a parent, and certainly from Katie's end, you know, it was tremendous learning experiences. Like last night when we get back to camp, and she was certainly sad that we didn't find her deer. You know, we lost some blood. She says, hey, let's back out. And, you know, it's dark now. And so it was really neat for her to see everybody camp be immediately, hey, we're going to get it. Yep. Everybody was positive. Let's work together. So that was a great learning experience for her. And then when we got back out there, you know, she knows that, you know, that I certainly know what's going on from a hunting end, and what I have my views of things, and as others do as well. But it was a really neat experience to hear all the people who were there say, hey, this is what I think. No, I'm not sure that this was it. You know, hey, maybe we did this. So it was really cool that, you know, as a group, we worked together, talked through a bunch of scenarios and figured out what was likely the best scenario. So it did her good to see adults who I'm sure she thinks, you know, hey, they clearly know what's going on. You know, maybe somebody had a better idea on exactly how we should start the search. So that was a pretty cool learning experience for her as well.
Yeah. And for us as well. That was
I learned, you know, how many people would have gave up on that deer? I mean, we searched for that deer for a few hours. So, you know, it being just a doe, you want to say just a doe, how many people gave up on that deer and let that deer out there and not found it? A lot. We, you know, resiliency paid off, and we took it into our own hands, and we got everybody together and as a group.
It turns out that deer wasn't too far from where we left it last night.
No.
It's just we were on a little bit of the wrong direction. I think we assumed where it would go and come back in a short grid later. You know, we had her.
There we were.
So that just goes to show that if you get a group of guys together that, you know, all collectively want to get something accomplished, get it accomplished. If you hit a big buck, you hit a doe, you hit whatever, hit a scrub buck, I don't care what it is, put your best effort into finding that deer. You made the choice to pull the trigger. If it wasn't that good of a shot, it's your choice. You have to figure it out and find that deer.
Yeah. Well, and in some instances, the right thing to do, especially if you're hunting in the evening and you're unsure of your shot or you're unsure of your hit, you see blood, the last thing you want to do is push that deer away from where it's eventually going to lay down and hopefully pass. It's always, almost always best if it's questionable. And the reason why we kind of pushed so hard to find it last night was the quality of shot. We were like, man, this thing could not have gone, should not have gone as far as it went with
the benefit of video and going back and watching that.
But it's a lot of times it's good to let them go overnight, regroup, think about what you're doing, get fresh legs, and go back in the morning and canvas that area that you were canvassing the night before, because it can change. Just light. Having light is extremely beneficial to the tracking process. So that worked out and is a good example of it working out with what we went through.
And back to what I was saying, I mean, you have to find that deer. You know, I've lost deer. It's going to happen to you if you hunt long enough. But you got to put your best effort in finding that deer. And if you put your best effort in, you can clear those woods and say, hey, I did everything in my power trying to find that deer. I cannot find it. It's happened to me.
Going back to young Katie, quality of character and just her persona, she's impressive. She's kind of stoic. Really, really, you can tell she knows what's going on and is aware of what's going on around her. So we're sitting in camp last night after we got back from the tracking, and she said, man, I really wanted to rub some blood on my cheeks. So having done that before as a little kid, I was like, yeah, I hope she gets to rub some blood on her cheeks. So we find the deer this morning, and the first thing she does, rub some blood on her cheeks. But my favorite part of it, she rubs blood on the cheeks and goes, now I want to gut it. And I was like,
awesome.
That's impressive as from her age, and then watching her actually with her father safely gut the deer. It was you're doing a very good job with that one.
Well, thank
very
you.
Good she's going to be one heck of a huntress. One heck of a huntress someday. So, getting away from the weekend and, you know, what we're all doing up here, and we had a great time. We thank Jerry for that, and thank Kip for bringing his daughter up. It was an unbelievable experience on our part too to see a first harvest. So now we're going to get into some serious talk about some issues that are happening in PA right now, and that is with the CWD and the EHD, or blue tongue as they have it out in Allegheny County. So why don't we start off with CWD, and since I am not near an expert on CWD, and I'm sure you're not an expert on CWD either, but you know a little bit more about it being a part of QDMA and being an educational instructor, so please let us know what you know about CWD and how it's affecting the deer herds in PA.
Sure, and you're right. I'm not an expert on it, but one of the cool things about QDMA is we work with the experts on, you know, all that stuff, whether it's disease-related or research-related. So I have access to a lot of the top disease minds in the world, and at QDMA that we take that information and are able to give it back to the hunters,
yes,
you know,
yep,
who, you know, in layman's terms, because I'm a simple man, I can't understand all the big words either, but we make sure that, you know, we get it to hunters in a usable manner so that they can take advantage of it.
Yes. Yeah. Again, not to cut you off, but drawing parallels to the importance of organizations like the QDMA and the importance of you, the listener, again, doing things to improve upon what it is that we're passionate about. So going back to that, that's one example of the QDMA and why you should pay attention to it, because you get that level of analytics behind what it is that you're being, or you want to learn or you're finding out about. There's science behind it, there's analytics about it, there's tracking behind it, and there's a lot of historical data associated with it as well, which eliminates a lot of the word of mouth type scenarios, which CWD is a very good example of a I believe this versus I believe that type of it's like climate control, global warming, you're on one side or the other. But it is, it, I mean, it, well, I'll let Kip.
So you're drifting.
Lead into it a little bit further. I have a tendency to do that.
We're going to talk about Trump here soon.
I have a tendency to do that.
Yeah, CWD is one of the biggest threats to the future of deer hunting and deer management, and in large part because there's no cure for the disease. There's no vaccine for it, and it's 100% fatal. So anything that's 100% fatal for deer, you know, this animal we love, is not bode well for the future. And there's a lot we don't know about it, which is a little bit of a scary thing. So as the managers right now, you know, it's about taking the best information we have and trying to do our best to just minimize the spread of this disease, you know, until we can learn more about it.
Right, right.
And, you know, it's in 23 or 24 states now and a couple provinces. It continues to spread. And it's certainly not good for deer hunters. And the vast majority of disease experts and managers, you know, clearly look at this as one of the biggest threats to our way of life as hunters and what we want. And so as hunters, we certainly need to be in tune with it and do everything possible to keep it from spreading.
Right.
Because once it gets to an area, you know, there's no way to decontaminate an area. You can't get rid of it. You know, the materials that cause the disease can stay in the soil for years, you know, decades.
Yeah,
so
scary.
We need to stop the spread as quickly as possible.
That being said, what is your what can you tell the listeners right now? How can you stop CWD from spreading? What is your best efforts in doing that, and how can they help?
Well, the two ways that CWD is most easily spread is through movement of live animals. So captive deer being moved from one facility to another, as well as state wildlife agencies moving live animals. You know, there are states that are getting elk. Wisconsin is getting elk from Kentucky. West Virginia just relocated elk. And because there's no practical live animal test for CWD, you can unknowingly move animals to have the disease, you know, but just haven't shown any symptoms yet. So the most likely way to move the disease is by moving live animals. We know that beyond a shadow of a doubt. And the second easiest way to move it is by moving carcasses of deer and elk that have the high risk parts, eyes, brain, spleen, the central nervous system, the like a backbone. That's the place in these animals where CWD prions accumulate. So if you say you go to Illinois this year, we shoot a deer, has CWD, we don't realize. If you bring it back to Pennsylvania, which is illegal, you can't transfer across state lines with those, but hunters do it every day.
Yeah.
You bring that deer back, say you debone the meat, process yourself, throw that carcass out back, you could just unknowingly have brought CWD from that area and deposited in where you live.
Yeah.
So as hunters, if we stopped moving all live animals and we stopped moving those high-risk parts, those are the two best things we can do. To minimize spread until the science can catch up and figure out some way for us to combat this disease.
So you will debunk one myth right now in relation to CWD. It is real. It is an issue. It is something that we need to pay attention to. It's not the government that's trying to kill off the deer. It's not insurance companies. It's none of that. Those stories that you hear in relation to, that's not really real. They're just trying to make money from it. No, it's real. And another aspect of what you can do, kind of, I believe, to offset it is be aware of what's on your property. And part of that is what J-Rod does on a daily basis. Get involved. Do more than what you do right now. Take an extra step and an extra effort to be aware of what's moving around your property and knowing how to define a deer that may be infected with CWD. What kind of side effects or what physical attributes or physical ailments are you seeing in relation to deer that are have CWD?
Once they actually start showing the symptoms, they waste away very quickly. Hence the name chronic wasting disease. They become, you know, extremely skinny. Ribs are showing, you know, lameness, lethargic. They're often drooling at the mouth, lose their fear of humans. So once they have those symptoms, it's very clear that they can have the disease for months or years before it's they show those symptoms.
Dormant, yeah.
And that's where the danger is in moving animals and moving parts, because they can have it and you just don't realize it.
Right.
But once they actually start showing it, it's very obvious something is wrong. Even if you don't know exactly what it is, it's very clear something is not right here.
Yeah.
So, Jerry, as a landowner, you have so much time and money invested into this property and managing it correctly. This has to scare you. The CWD is right in your back door. So what do you think about it, and how's it feeling to you that the CWD is so close?
Well, it's obviously
the areas are so close to you.
Yeah, some of the things that we don't know is what scares you the most. And talking to Kip, As obvious and factual as it is, I think it might scare you a little bit more. There's not much more we can do than continue to educate everybody on it. And we do. We see how far it is possibly spread and where it is next to us here. And yeah, you're outside your family and your job. It's sort of your life's work for us as land managers here on the farm. And you'd hate to think that all that could be lost, wiped away. Yeah. So I think it needs to be brought to attention and do everything we can.
And I have friends in Wisconsin. Wisconsin got the disease back in 2001. It was the first deer they shot there. So they've been dealing with it since actually spring of 2002 when they actually confirmed that it was CWD positive. And I have friends there that said, you know, that historically, yeah, we hear about it in the state, but it wasn't that close to us, that now the disease is in their area, and they live in a CWD disease zone like we have in Pennsylvania right. now in certain right. places. And so their DNR highly recommends that they get all deer tested that are shot in that area. And they do, and they said every single year they have at least one deer that they kill on their farm that tests positive for CWD. CWD. So, you know, and you can't, you're not supposed to eat them. Now, there's no proof ever that it has transferred, you know, to humans across the species barrier, but still the World Health Organization and the Centers for Disease Control said, look, if it's sick, you're not supposed to eat it. So, but just think about how different hunting would be for you or me or any of us sitting here if you couldn't eat the meat.
Right.
It would be a huge blow to my family if we couldn't eat the venison.
Ours as well.
And into society as well. You know, we get to hunt because society lets us hunt. Mm-hmm. And a big part of that is because they know that we eat that meat.
Right.
And when, you know, when we have CWDs in your area and those deer are CWD positive, you can't eat that. That's a very different hunting season for you.
Yes. So let's say I'm a property owner or I just happen upon a deer that I think is infected. Is what do you know, and perhaps we don't know the full answer to this, are you contacting the game commission? Are you allowed to harvest that animal and then give it to somebody to test? Or what steps should you take if you know?
If you see a deer that it appears sick, absolutely. Call your local biologist or your game commission, not local office, or regional office, and tell them. Typically, they will not allow you to shoot it. They will often send an officer out or a warden will come out. But if it is sick, they often will then harvest it and have it tested. Mm-hmm. There's other things that a deer can have that, you know, mimic CWD, but the severity of the disease means that it's important to be tested. So contacting your local game commission office is absolutely the right way to go, and then they can have animals that need to be tested rather than help everybody.
I guess the scary part of that, it led to your question, is you have one. You've turned it in. It tests positive. What happens then?
Yeah, don't eat it. And the proper way to dispose of them is it a landfill? And the reason being is once the materials that can cause CWD remain in the soil, so you don't want to just dump it out back, because plants that grow there can uptake that material and actually then have it on their leaves for other animals to come and eat. So, you know, the best way to get rid of it is take it to a landfill, and that way that it's covered properly. And the whole game changes when CWD ends up in your
area. Directly, what happens with the rest of the herd and the way you manage your farm, and what are the stipulations put out there at that point?
Once it ends up in a new area, the Pennsylvania Game Commission here in PA and most other state wildlife agencies will go in and want to test additional animals in and around that area. And typically, or preferably, they do that through hunter harvest. Sometimes they have to go in and shoot some deer outside of season to test. And it's necessary. And as hunters, we should support that, because that's the way for the agencies to be able to determine, okay, is this likely an isolated incident, or was this really spread through? So it gives them a feel for prevalence of the disease in that area, and if additional precautions are necessary, you know, to help protect the rest of those free-ranging deer and hunters in those areas.
I think that education is as important as anything, because I know I've heard from others that if it happens, I don't want to turn it in. I don't want them to come in and fear that there's going to be a row of snipers taking out the entire herd without studying it and making sure. So it's sort of taking a bullet for the team's thing and knowing that it's for the greater cause and not being afraid to do that.
Absolutely. And it's certainly the right thing to do. If it's there, as bad as it is to have it be there, it's best to know that it is and then have a feel for how much is there.
Worse to let it be there and not take action against it. In the long run.
And a perfect example of that is in New York several years ago, when New York confirmed CWD, and it just turned out it was a captive animal that a guy had. He was rehabilitating it, and thank goodness he did have it tested, because it is a at least it appears that it may literally have been the first animal that had CWD in that area, because that was back in, I think, 2004. It's been quite a while now, but New York has repeatedly tested around that area and throughout their state since then and have never found another animal. Huh. So thank God that guy did
caught
have it tested.
When he caught it.
Otherwise, so it could have been on the landscape and continued to spread. So, yeah, so if you think you may have it, absolutely let the Game Commission know. It's to all hunters' benefit to find it.
Action.
If it's there.
Yep.
So the being a part of QDMA, I'm sure you know about the doe allocation tags and how many they put out. And so why are they putting out so many CWD tags in these chronic wasting disease areas, but lowering the number of doe tags available for your sending for your permit?
That's all politically driven. That's not from the agency's biologists. You know, there's no data to support doing that. So in most of those cases, the Pennsylvania Game Commission's deer biologists will come up with an antlerless allocation rate for all the different WMUs, and then our board of commissioners often then takes that and it's not just Pennsylvania. Every state has the political games that they play with that. They raise some of the allocations, they lower some. So that's not driven by data from the Game Commission's deer biologists.
I was just wondering, it's because we used to be able to get in 2C, that's where I hunt a lot, 66,000, I think, and now they're down to 49. But they're in the CWD site, so you can buy CWD tags for the area. I don't get the process there.
So, I mean, it's very confusing for hunters to see that. Now, part of it is, the WMUs are much bigger than some of those disease areas or where we hunt. And as hunters, we often think, the Game Commission manages to our area, and they don't. In every WMU, there's areas where there's more deer than where you personally hunt and fewer deer. Yeah. So Game Commission puts an allocation rate for the whole unit, but then as hunters, we hunt at the property level. We can't expect the Game Commission to manage at our property level. But one of the things that we do at QDMA is teach people, hey, within your unit, here's how to figure out how many does you should be shooting.
Right.
Is it maybe more than average for unit? Or in some cases, it's less. In some cases, it's none. So we help enable individual hunters to come up with some of that information, figure it out on their own, so that way they can site-specific manage and help themselves from a hunting end, without having to rely on a Game Commission trying to manage specifically for their area.
Going back to we need as a group of outdoorsmen, the brotherhood, to do more than what we're doing right now before it is too late and we don't have anything to do something against. So the QDMA as an entity is chapter based. So there's chapters in Pennsylvania, correct?
That's correct. Yeah, we have local groups of volunteers, states all across the Whitetails Range. And one of the neat things about our local, we actually call them branches, but they're exact same thing as chapters.
Yep. Okay.
Like all other conservation organizations, they do annual fundraising dinners and that kind of thing. But we also require them all to host at least one educational event a year.
Mm-hmm.
They have to host an evening seminar or a workshop or a youth hunt. And the education is what we're predicated on, and I think it's pretty cool that we require them, do those.
Yes.
Which it's a great way to get folks in the area involved and bring other professionals in to talk. And so it's pretty cool. I'm extremely proud that we require our folks to do that.
So real quick, when is your next class in Pennsylvania? When is your next meeting or seminar you're putting on in PA so our listeners can go?
Actually, I'm not sure because we have so many branches in Pennsylvania that are all doing those. So
if you get on the website.
We could look. You could go to our website and go on Pennsylvania and see what events are there.
What's coming up.
But that's a good thing, I guess, that I don't know, just because there are
so many going on. That's awesome. So if you're interested in what you're hearing today about the QDMA and want to find information about specific to your region or where you sit in Pennsylvania, you go to the QDMA's website and look that stuff up. And I would encourage you to attend. You don't have to join. You don't have to do anything. Just go out and attend and see what it's like. Because the first step towards you becoming more than what you are right now and you influencing what it is that we have is taking that first step. And the first step usually should be knowledge. You should know before you act. And the QDMA is a good place to find that information out. And we'll touch on another thing here in relation to when is your next KIP big event. And there are two now, used to be three or four nationally held events where it's a deer stored. Is it
Can Kip touch a little bit on that membership?
Sure.
Because I think the cost of an annual membership, when you talked about getting the information, getting that material to yourself, is, if you're a deer hunter and supportive of that and want to see this continue, I think you'd be a fool not to join this.
So
you want to, can you tell us a little bit about what they get?
Sure. We have, we're membership based. Annual membership is $35. That gets you 6 issues of our Quality Whitetails magazine, which, it's not a hunting magazine. It's, information on deer biology, habitat enhancement, deer movement patterns. There are hunting related, articles in there, from a strategy end. So that alone is worth the cost of membership.
Oh, yeah. These magazines are on the shelf here and stay there from year to year, unlike a magazine you use and throw away. It's like an encyclopedia of deer knowledge here.
And we make sure that it's not just, how to hunt my farm or manage my farm. More than a third of QDMA members don't own a single acre of land.
Yeah.
A lot of our members are, hunt public land. So we have public land issues in there.
Yep.
Actually, that's one cool thing about our branches here in Pennsylvania. A few of them every year get with the Game Commission, just to enhance habitat on some of our game lands.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, which I think is just great. It's a great use of, local labor and some of the funds that our branches raise, to help all hunters in those communities, which is pretty cool.
That is very cool. Very cool.
Well, Jerry said yesterday about different goals, different properties. So his property might be completely different than one that I'm trying to manage. So I have all wooded property. He has fields and woods and, a mixture of hardwoods and stuff like that. So he's going to do it way different than what I'm doing over on my mountain ground. So, being a part of that and getting the magazines and getting that membership is going to tell you how to do different properties differently. Correct?
That's right. And one of the cool things about managing deer is that there's no one right way to do it. There's lots of different ways. You tell people, we take the environment that you have, whatever you have to work with, whether you have 5 acres or 50 acres, we teach you techniques and strategies to be able to use within any of those environments. And you just take the pieces that you like and apply it in the way that you want where you are, to have the most fun. And, at the end of the day, you have to enjoy it. You have to have a good time with it. Some people get so tied up in the hunting end and, I can't do this and I got to stay out of there and I can't shoot this deer. And I tell people, you know what? You get so wound up, you forget to have fun with it. Hunting is fun. Yeah. That's why we are in this. So, don't get so tied up that you get stressed out about it. Man, do it, enjoy it. Enjoy the journey and have fun with it.
And that's one thing that the Quality Deer Management Association, that you don't hear, hey, we're trying to have you manage for 180 class deer, 190 class deer. You're not doing good unless you have a 200 inch deer. It's not that. It's managing for quality whitetails. It's managing that herd to the best that you can. And the goals, I guess, what I was talking about was your individual goals, whether you want to, the property, different in Pennsylvania versus Illinois or Kansas or those other states. So I think they're individual goals and where you want to set and gradually increase the age structure, increase if you're going for score and whatever you're doing. But there's never a pressure that I've heard there of we're managing for just trophy whitetails, which is great.
Yes. I think one of the best shirts we've ever made said, at QDMA we measure success in memories, not inches of antlers. This weekend was a perfect example.
Yes, ideal example. And going back to Jerry's statement about membership. So even coming here, I naive to what the QDMA was, I had heard about it, I never really looked into what they were, I'm sitting here talking to Kip, and I'm saying, well, what do you guys do? I'm like, okay, cool, that's cool, that's cool. And then I was like, well, how much do I have to pay? How much I knew it was membership-based. I didn't know how much it was, and sometimes you think in your mind, based off of the explanation, this has got to be $150 a month, or this has to be $500 a year, or... $35 is a very minimal amount versus what you gain out of it. And I'll use the example of the magazine that sits in the racks here. So I was like, well, I get a magazine. Okay, well, that's cool. And then Kip went and got the magazine and brought the magazine out. And then he brought out the annual report along with the magazine. And the quality of content in the magazine is extremely impressive. But I like the... annual data report that was provided as well. A lot of information in there that you wouldn't think people have, and a lot of information in there that's important to pay attention to. So in my opinion, I mean, after we're done here with the podcast and we leave the bearded buck and I go home, I'll be a QDMA member. For sure.
QDMA.
Kip, don't we get a cool QDMA hat with that membership too, don't they usually?
Yeah, the incentives are always changing, but I'm not sure what the current one is, if it's a hat. I know that one of the things you get is the aging and scoring bucks on the hoof DVD. teach people how to, you know, look at body characteristics and age deer. Yeah. And
that's so, one of my favorite parts of the magazine. Every time I get it, you know, going through there with the kids even, and it's try and guess the age of this
that's
buck.
That's one of the most popular
parts. It's not so much
parts,
guess
sure.
the score of this buck. It's guess the age of this buck. And that's great because you'll have the pictures on there with where that buck's from, what kind of habitat it's in, where it's been raised, what time of the year it is, and show some pictures. In the next page, it'll have a lot of these guys, Kip included, with their guesstimate on the age, and you can compare it to what these guys are doing.
You bring up a good point there. So just use the basic example of parenthood. You want your child to be better than you. You want to take the pieces of you that you know need to be improved, and you want to make sure that they're improved in them rather than them having to repeat what you've done and improve it themselves. Interest in the outdoors is always one of those things that I'm really cognizant of with my kids, and that's a good example. The content that you get with a QDMA is so much different than the content that you would get if I just go out and pick up a Whitetail magazine or something like that. It's very process-driven. It's very detail-driven, and if you want somebody to start learning about something in the right manner, QDMA content is a very good set of information to work with your kids.
Well, there's a whole youth division.
Our RAC Pack, which is the youth program, and so how to expose kids to the woods and special things for them. And
it's awesome.
And we're lucky with the magazine, the content that you talked about. It is tremendous content, and that's in large part because of the partnerships and associations we have with the top research institutions in the country and the top researchers who have been QDMA has been around since 1988, so we have developed that relationship with them where they trust us, and now they realize the reach we have. So they bring that information to us because they know then that we can get it out into hunters' hands who will really use it.
Yep.
So, that's why QDMA staff write a bunch of the articles, but the quality comes in large part from, because we have such a reach with those top researchers and managers that, that's truly what makes the magazine special and our educational program special.
Tough to beat. So going back to what we were going to talk about before Jerry brought up the $35 fee to become a member that you should pay after you listen to this podcast, the QDMA hosts two events a year now, and the Bearded Buck will be host to one of them. That program is what is that program? And you guys can
part about that, Kip, is I met Kip. What was that, in 2006 or seven at the Deer Stewart One course, and then, I think we might have messaged back and forth or talked to him on the phone over the years. And then I ran into Kip, if you recall, several years ago at the Detroit airport, I think it was. I saw Kip walking through, and I said, that looks like Kip. And talked to him quick because he's getting on a plane. And I'd mentioned that, hey, drop me a call sometime. We're doing more on our farm here and like to get with you and possibly get involved on a greater level. And from there, we kept the communication up. Kip came in last year. And as it looks right now, we're going to be doing a Deer Stewart 2 course here. So you could elaborate on 1 and 2 and everything that goes on.
Yeah, our Deer Stewart program is the most intensive deer class that anybody can take in the country. It's more intensive than a college class. It's over the course of 2 days or 2.5 days, and we teach them throughout the country, and it's everywhere from hunters, landowners, natural resource professionals can come to these and do. And we've been doing this since 2007, where we teach them the four cornerstones of QDM. We talk about herd management, habitat management, hunter management, and herd monitoring. And so Deer Steward 1 class is all inside. It's all PowerPoint presentations, and it's just an awesome class. So if you're a deer nut, this is for you. And then Deer Steward 2 is the application of those principles. So it's everything we learned in the class that we take and apply in the field. So folks are coming, they actually have their hands in the dirt. As we show them how to plant things. They're pulling jawbones from deer. They're aging deer fetuses. They're analyzing harvest data. And the idea of that is, you can put together your own management plan, to really see how to do it. And so we have the Deer Steward 1s we teach, and we typically teach 2 Deer Steward 2s each year somewhere in the country. Okay. And next year, one of those two will be right here at the Bearded Buck, and it's going to be a great class for sure.
Going back to being more than a trigger pull and paying attention to the Bearded Buck, and just our involvement with the Bearded Buck and understanding what they are, you see a lot of these shows, and I would hope that because we don't have the relationship with those other hunting shows like we do the Bearded Buck, I would hope that those other shows are as serious about hunting as the Bearded Buck is and are as forward-facing and progressive in the manner in which they're actually doing stuff to better the state of Pennsylvania, the state of deer, the state of hunting. It's not just we want to be on television, watch us. There's so much more behind what it is that they do. So
there one other thing before we go past it, there is another level, Deer Steward 3, right? And then, which is something you can explain also. It's not obtainable through a class.
Yeah, Deer Steward 3, unlike levels 1 and 2, it's not a class. It's an honor that you earn through long-term service to white-tailed deer or a QDMA. And it's for folks that have gone through levels 1 and 2. And we have the application on our website where you just have to look and you can accrue points for different aspects of deer or habitat management or mentoring students. So to give you an example, about 2,000 people have been through a Deer Steward 1. About 1,000 have been through level 2. And there's less than 100 that have reached level 3 status. Everybody can do it. It's not something you can buy or do overnight. It's, you know, through that long-term work for deer and our natural resources.
Right.
So that when you get there, I mean, it's, you know, incredibly powerful because it's, you know, something you need to be incredibly proud of.
Yeah.
And I am sure that J-Rod will be a level 3. And he probably could meet it now. You know, as soon as he takes level 2, he probably has accrued enough points just because he, you know, he manages habitat, he manages deer, he mentors people, he provides that stuff. You know, that's the kind of stuff. And it's really cool. And it just lets you kind of set you apart, you know, from some other hunters in that, hey, you know what, I'm not only am consuming deer and takes, but I am really giving back.
Oh, yeah.
And that's really what that's about.
Yep. Beautiful thing.
Well, absolutely. So on a recap of the podcast, what do you want to recap? Take a kid out hunting. It is rewarding as it can be.
Yes.
Even if it's not your own kid, you can have a buddy's kid. He doesn't hunt, and that kid wants to hunt, take him out. If it's okay with his parents, take him out. Take him or her out. Let him get a feel for it. And I tell you what, it's an unbelievable feeling. I mean, I was, my stomach was turning when we were looking for that deer. And when we found it, man, I tell you what, I jumped for it. Was awesome. It was an awesome feeling just knowing she was going to get that deer. So
get your kid, out.
Kids in the woods, stop moving deer body parts around. Stop transporting deer and elk. So take care of your CWD stuff that you can take care of personally. Listen to what they're telling you. Stop moving carcasses around. Stop taking it out of the area, and harvest what they ask you to harvest.
Yep. Another aspect in summation of what we've been talking about, do more than you're doing right now. If you're listening to this podcast and you're serious about hunting, you should be doing more. And that's easy to say, hard to do. Not everybody has time. Not everybody has the ability to get out and do things. But there are always things that you can do to progress what it is that we're passionate about in the sport that we love. So QDMA is an example of that. Not saying you have to go out there and sign up for a membership or you have to go out there and do these things. But just be aware of your influence on what it is that you love to do, and please just attempt to do one thing more. Tomorrow, do one thing more. Then the next day, do another thing. It's very, build momentum. We need to build momentum for the sport's sake.
Absolutely. The kids are our future, and you are their future. So if you don't get them into it, they won't be into it. So real quick, I want Jerry to give a shout out to the Bearded Buck and let him give his information on where you can get merchandise, catch his show, and then I'm going to follow up with Kip and where he can get a hold of Kip or QDMA.
You got it. Well, the Bearded Buck has just finished up the first season, 13 episodes on the Pursuit Channel. We'll be starting to air our reruns again on the Pursuit Channel for another 13 weeks. At the same time, we're airing on the Hunt Channel, which is free online, www.thehuntchannel.com.
It's thehuntchannel.tv.
Right. I was seeing if you caught that.
I know. What
he said.
That's another, the voodoo side of J-Rod is he tries to better me. So he'll throw out curveballs, and sometimes I catch him, sometimes
we'll also be airing on Carbon TV here within the next 2 weeks or so. All 13 episodes will be available there on demand. And, you know, we have a lot of good things coming up. Bearded Buck's heading on a few different hunts out of state here soon and coming back to PA for the rut. So we have a lot of interesting things. Cud, we started off the season. Cud shot a nice buck out in Kentucky with us. So he's sort of, I think he'll retire for a few weeks now here. We saw him last night for a few moments and he was off. But
razzed him out of hibernation.
We do have a new apparel line coming out with the Bearded Buck logo on it and some stuff. And that'll be on the website here shortly. We'll be starting to promote that and get it on our social media, Facebook, Instagram. So appreciate it.
And what is that website?
Well, I'm going to leave that to Rob.
Go ahead, Rob.
With the beardedbuck.com.
Beardedbuck.com.
Beardedbuck.com. And just real quick along the lines of what the Bearded Buck and how you can access their stuff. I personally don't have the Pursuit channel. So I can't watch their, I can't DVR. I can't turn my TV on and watch that. The huntchannel.tv. Go there. If you don't have the Pursuit channel, it's real easy. Just go on your computer, huntchannel.tv, type in the Bearded Buck in the search panel along the top, and you can watch all of their episodes at any time you want to watch them. So that's how I consume the Bearded Buck.
Okay. Off the cap. Give some information on how people can get a hold of QDMA.
Sure. QDMA. They can go to our website at qdma.com, and we'd love to have them be members. And, you know, but even if they, you know, if they don't want to become a member, please still go to the website. You can grab, there's tons of information there to help them be a more knowledgeable deer hunter and deer steward. So, you know, we'd love to have you be a member, but if not, please at least go and grab the stuff, and hopefully it enhances your opportunities this fall and to cross paths with the deer of your dreams, or to have your first deer with maybe your child or a neighbor child or somebody else who you can get out there in the woods and expose them to the magic of the wildlife.
Yes.
All right. That's all A1, we have for you A1. Today.
Wait.
You still going?
Wait. We've got to plug ourselves.
We barely talked about
the Rut Report this entire time.
No. I was going to.
We don't have to plug ourselves. You were going to lead into that?
I was going to lead into that.
I thought you were going to close out.
No, well, go
by
ahead.
All means, what were you going to say?
Oh, no, I was going to say...
I'll cut you off.
We appreciate Kip Adams for being here today, and congratulations on your daughter's first harvest. That was awesome.
Awesome.
Jerry, thank you very much. Hospitality is second to none up here at the Bearded Buck.
Always.
I had a great time and saw some stuff we would never be able to see, Rob and I. So,
likewise.
Congratulations on your property. It's an awesome thing. Congratulations on Austin's
thank
harvest.
You. Great having you guys up.
So we are PA Report.
Thank you guys, before you close, for all the help with Katie and helping her retrieve that deer and just being a part of that whole thing. So my hat's off to you. You guys are top-notch for sure.
We did not mention that both of those hunts from this weekend, Austin's and Katie's, will be in an episode.
That's right.
Season 2 in a Bearded Buck. So you guys will get to see what we lived this weekend, which was awesome.
That is awesome. Yep.
Another aspect.
I love when I catch those shows. And we were up here for Doe Roundup and stuff, and I see it on TV. I see it all happen, and it's really cool. So. Anyway, so you can find us at PARutReport.com. We have Facebook at PARutReport, and we have Instagram, and Rob takes care of all that stuff, so I'm not sure what that deal is, but it's at PARutReport.
We have Instagram.
So thank you all for tuning in.
Wait. Roll calls. Okay.
Make sure you
participate in the roll calls. Roll calls are our daily posts on our Facebook page where we ask you to give us the WMU you're hunting in, and what's going on with you. So we track where you're at. We track what time things are happening. And really, it's just the ability to be excited about what's going on in the woods if something exciting isn't happening right out in front of you. But you get a lot of people that thank us for giving them that avenue to sit behind their desk at work or
living vicariously through other hunters.
Hunting vicariously through roll call. So visit our Facebook page and check out a roll call. Participate in roll calls if you're out in the stand. Obviously, listen to our podcast. You're listening to this one right now. This is episode
27.
We should know this. Yeah. 20-something. Episode 20-something. So we have 20-something episodes before this one. Listen to that, too.
All right. Can I close out now?
Yeah. Stage is yours.
Sorry, this is an hour and 2 minutes. I was trying to shut it down in an hour.
Take a bow.
So this is PA Reports Hunting, Fishing, and Outdoors sounding off from the Bearded Buck. Thank you guys very much.
Thank you.